They say hiring a comedy writer from the Howard Stern Show was nuts. But the craziest thing Brian Simmons did after I brought him on board was he ended up teaching meditation to inner city students that most had already given up on. And you know what? It worked. Talk about real alternatives to suspension, man. Brian didn't just crack jokes. He showed up every day with authenticity, compassion, and mindfulness, meeting students exactly where they were. Turns out, laughter and meditation aren't gimmicks. They're lifelines. Today, on the Traveling Principal Show, hear how Brian and I share memories of impossible classroom stories and real life career pathways by doing what nobody expected, which was exactly what these kids needed. Welcome to the Traveling Principal Show. Today I have a special guest, someone who is not only a leader in education, but a true innovator in preparing students for the real world. He's also an old friend of mine. I do not want to forget that. Someone who I can say I've gone through the ringer with and back, worked easily a 10-hour day of nonstop madness, you guys. And Brian was right there in the trenches with me, the current director of career and technical education for Mount Vernon City School District, Brian Simmons. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's great to be here. Great to see you and to have this reunion, and really happy to be here.
Dude, let me just tell the fans, the listeners, the couple that I have about you really quickly. Brian Simmons is an award-winning writer. And I remember learning this, Brian, when we were doing the interview. Turgeon and I were going through the resumes, and I'm like, okay, look at what this guy's got in his resume. Award-winning writer, producer, and director who made a bold move from network television into the New York City Department of Education to bring real-world writing skills to inner-city students. With a degree in psychology and nearly two decades of daily mindfulness meditation, Brian has pioneered the integration of mindfulness into educational organizations from elementary schools to colleges, helping lower stress, boost achievement, and prepare students for the future. Currently, Brian leads the Career and Technical Education Department at Mount Vernon City High School District, or School District, sorry, ensuring students have world-class opportunities to thrive in today's workforce. You guys know I'm a huge fan of CTE. His experience blending industry expertise, mindfulness, and education together make him a powerful advocate for CTE folks. I've had the privilege of working with Brian over 12 years ago. Brian, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm so grateful that you're here.
Thank you, man. Thanks for that introduction. And yeah, it's great. And just to give you a shout out too, like in my early days of transitioning from the entertainment industry into teaching, like, you know, you played a role in helping bridge that gap when I first started. We would sit down and you showed me some of the ropes, and then, you know, I went from there. But I always look back on that time.
Well, thanks, buddy. I mean, it was because I had some good ones that we were all very successful. You know, I it's been a long time. You and I haven't spoken in a few years, albeit a random, you know, sporadic hello. I have a bunch of questions. I want to start from your career and work our way to food and finance, talk about some war stories, maybe play a game or two. Are you ready?
I'm up for it. Let's go.
All right, man. Okay. So your career was fascinating, right? It still is, but especially your time with as an intern on the Howard Stern Show. That's a world known of high energy and high creativity, a lot of controversy, right? What was one of the most unexpected lessons you learned working on that show, and did any of those skills translate into your world in education?
I had to get into Howard Stern, right? Because, I mean, there's a lot that happened. I was an intern there, and then I went to Comedy Central. Many things happened. So
yeah.
I learned lessons along the way, but since you started at the beginning of it, I actually originally was going to go into education and had my master's degree, and I was student teaching in a third grade classroom. And out of nowhere, all of a sudden, there was someone came to me and said, basically, they wanted me to be an intern on the Howard Stern Show. Big story. I'm not going to get into that now. And I'm sitting there weighing, am I going to do it? Not going to do it. And I'm sitting there with it. And, you know, I ultimately, years later, went into high school. Right. But at that time, I was in the third grade classroom. And I was trying to teach a little girl how to count nickels. And she couldn't get it. And after the fourth try, I turned around and said, I'm going to take the Howard Stern gig. So before
classic.
I knew it, on day one, I got thrown into the air, on the air. And it was insane. The amount of stories I could tell you, some would not be appropriate for this particular podcast.
Yeah.
But the one memory that probably transformed me the next is I had made the right connections. There was someone who became my mentor. His name is Vinny Favalli, was the vice president of late night programming. He was sort of like the liaison between David Letterman and Les Moonves at CBS.
Okay.
So once a week, there would be like a writer's meeting. And anyone could pitch to Howard. But what I noticed was everyone was terrified of the king. But because I had this master's degree in my back pocket, I'm like, I don't care. So I'd have a list of ideas and I'd rattle them off and the whole room would go, like, they're not going to laugh unless he laughs type of thing. Like, we're not going to eat the food unless the king eats the food.
Oh,
so I ultimately got the attention of not only Howard, but this guy from CBS, because Howard was on CBS at the time, and got me to Comedy Central. When I was going to go to Comedy Central, I started to think, well, this is now not a joke. They're going to pay me to have to come up with ideas for a career that I'm completely not experienced or trained in. And it was not the first time I heard it, but I heard, and I'm going to clean up the version of what he said. I heard Howard say in a long drawn out meeting, I just want to effing meditate.
Oh.
And I remember looking at him and I'm like, if the king of all media uses this strategy, there might be something to it.
Yeah.
So in order to prepare myself for creativity, a creative career, I, on the spot, began meditating. By the way, I can see that that bio is a little old because it's nearly 2 decades. It's like we're coming on year 26.
Holy smokes.
And I haven't missed a day, by the way. It was February 1st, was a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. 13 years I've never missed, of not missing one day of a daily meditation practice.
Excellent.
But in any event, when I was in Comedy Central, I have to come up with these ideas. We'd have these writers' meetings, and it's very competitive, right? Because you could just kill someone else's idea. And what I would do is I would just meditate every morning. And to me, it was like a superpower. This is long before it was publicized. This
wow.
is in like 1999. And I was like, I'm cheating. I'm just sitting here. And like on my shelf behind me, like these awards that you're telling me that I won, some of them just downloaded onto me during a meditation session. I wasn't trying to come up with a creative idea. I would just be watching my breathing, and then all of a sudden, like one of them was the Friars Club roast of Chevy Chase on Comedy Central. Like I had to do the whole promotion, like a massive television campaign for this. And I'm sitting there and I see this vision in my head. It was a picture of Chevy Chase with a pack of wolves behind him. And then a hand takes the picture, throws it down, and then the wolves start attacking the picture. And it haunted me. I'm like, what is this? What is this? And I realized from like in the meditation, from the recesses, this connects to my later English teacher career, right? It was a visual metaphor. He's going to get eaten by the wolves, thrown to the wolves.
Yeah.
And what I did was I teased that idea out. Well, what else would happen to him? He's going to get fed to the lions. He's going to get flushed down the toilet. He's going to get crapped on. And I went out and filmed every one of these scenarios with real animals and zoos and all of this stuff, whatever. And it won like these huge awards and stuff. So in any event, that one comment from Howard to sit there and say, I want to effing meditate, became my cheat sheet in, you know, not only Comedy Central, but like, It took on new dimensions of my own personal health, my well-being, and you know, this is decades later, and I'm still doing it. So, thanks, Howard. That was one good comment.
That is phenomenal, because I do recall just even meeting you and bringing it's 2008, right? The conversations that we were having then about meditation, like you say, today it's almost common, right? It's you can find it in schools. Like I said, you'd kill it in California. It's very popular out here. But even back then, it was quite a unique conversation to have, because I understood that it with that came a lot of medical benefits that you were talking about. If you were to say that out loud in front of anybody, people would look at you like you were crazy. Meditation back then just wasn't so commonplace and common practice as it is now. So that's...
And even when I first brought it into the school system, into food and finance years later, I created this class. I really did it as like an after school. I wasn't paid. Told the principal, Roger Church, I'm like, hey, will you let me take a group of kids? Don't have to pay me. And, you know, I sat there and created this curriculum. And this is years before anyone was doing anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the presence of mind to team up with the school psychologist in the building. And we gave a behavioral assessment at the beginning and then 3 months later at the end, and showed demonstrable, dramatic growth.
Interesting.
Holistically. And then one student was like Noelia. I still know. I won't say her last name to this day. Like it's charted out in the assessment. And it's like it paints the portrait of a different human being. Concentration improved by 18%. Anxiety down by 15%. One day I grabbed the girl. I said, listen, look at this with me. I know I want it to look like this thing is succeeding, but is this real? Have you changed? And she's like, 100%. I'm a different person. So in any event, at that time, it was so uncomfortable to actually do it, though, and to sit there and say, we're going to have cushions. We didn't even have it at that point. We're going to sit there and I'm going to ring a bell. Now it's taken for granted. Like that was like Wackoville at yeah. that point. But I'm like, I knew it in my bones. You know, I didn't need the research that this is the best thing that I can have with students in front of me. The best opportunity cost to make an impact. This is it. I know of nothing greater. If I did, I'd give it to them. This is the best thing I got.
Interesting. Dude, I'm so happy that you were able to find reprieve. I want to just kind of go off the cuff just for 1 second, because a lot of this happened after I had left. So I wasn't in on the ground up from when you had done this. Take the listener into what one of those sessions would have been like, because you're in inner city 50th and 10th Avenue public school, kind of like two opposite ends of the spectrum, right? You got yeah. crazy and you have calm. What were those sessions like with these kids?
The sessions were like, I had to design what the 3 months were going to look like. And it's just part and parcel of my educational style.
Okay.
I found myself, there are a lot of people in the mindfulness world who are well-intentioned, but they become a caricature. And they just play like, oh yeah, I'm the cool meditation guy. To me, that's BS. To me, if you can't go into the heart of New York City in the worst neighborhoods and you're dealing with violence, you're dealing with all sorts of things, and it doesn't help you there, it's not worth its own salt. So my lead card, other than designing a curriculum, is authenticity. Like, I'm not going to pretend to be the calmest person in the world. You'll see me get upset. I'm going to be real with you. But I want to demonstrate what this can do. I want to embody it myself and give you your own authentic experience. And you're the judge and jury. You decide if it works or it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And they ate it up. So much so that, like, after I showed, like, the data to the principal, he's like, well, what do you want to do next? I'm like, I want to do it in a day, not after school. Yeah. I'm like, I want a course. So there were different iterations of it. So at the end, what it was the sweet spot for me was every other day students would take the course. Uh-huh. It was baked in. I have science, I have math, I have English. I got what I called mindful fitness.
Wow.
That's how I created it. I mean, then it went on from there. And like during the pandemic, I mean, from week one, I was doing the sessions with them and their families, like leading them through meditation. So, I mean, your original question was, what would we do? I had it kind of down to a science. So, you know, eventually I got the funding for the cushions in the circle, which I'm reminded I have to thank you again for something. I remember when you got me the funding for a drum set in high school.
Oh, I remember that.
A pivotal thing. Anyway, whatever. Thank you for that. It's just, you know, but we had the meditation cushions, right? And I would start out and I'm going to go longer than you want me to, but you want to know really granularly what it looks like?
I'm in, yeah.
Okay. So I would have like a bottle it was just for day one. It was like a one trick pony with glitter in it. And then I would say, okay, listen, this is your mind, right? On you come into school on a Monday, you kind of chill, and then you realize that you had a homework assignment due that you forgot about. And I would shake up the glitter bottle, and they would see you go like this. And then your best friend is telling lies on you, and I shake it up. And then your teacher blames you for something that the kid next to you did unfairly. I would shake it up. Like, but you always have the chance to step back and observe. And I put the thing down, and it kind of distills. Even like I'm doing that, and you can feel the moment change.
Yeah.
I intended to do that on day one. It became ritualized. So every single time we would meditate, I would put it in the middle. A kid, I would assign them, they would pick it up, they would shake it. Someone else would ring the bell. We'd go into 10 minutes. At the end of 10 minutes, kid rings the bell. I wanted them to run it, not me. Then the other kid shakes it again. And then we would have a share about what they experienced. And then we would go into the content. And the content was the curricula that I created, which is like neuroscience and how the brain changes and neuroplasticity, and giving them real world examples about how their mind works and homework assignments for what they should be observing.
Holy smokes.
It was a form of boot camp of your own mind.
Yeah.
Your life is the curriculum. That's what it was.
Did you document any sort of efficacy with those kids throughout a length of period of time, like almost like a bit of an experiment?
I never did the longitudinal research study. I took all the data from that first one. But my first round of kids in the pilot, I still have it. I videotaped them and did an edit together of like the changes that it made. It's like pretty profound stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
And can I tell you this? I have to throw this in. I teach in places in Manhattan. One place is called New York Insight Meditation Center.
Yeah.
So when I go in there, I'm not personally, my religion is not Buddhist, but I always like to, whatever I'm working with, to go to like the real source of whatever I think is like the most efficacious source. So okay. Of course, that's 2,600 years old. So it's more than just being mindful. They've really worked out, you know, how to really free the mind over millennia. So I teach there. And I'm there about 3 months ago. It's a packed house, go through the meditation, answering questions on the microphone. It's, you know, this kind of scene. Mm-hmm. At the end of it, people are coming up, they ask me questions, say hi. There's a young man in his mid-20s. And when he walks up to me, I recognize him, and he's extremist. He's like, you forgot me already?
Oh, boy.
And I remember, I don't want to say his first name. He was a student in the class. And what he told me was that he was using at that point, was getting high, taking all sorts of substances, and would go to that class and to ground him. He ended up having a huge addiction issue, but the one thing that he centered him was this practice, and now he's been clean and sober for 3 years. He didn't know I would be there. He's just a daily meditator right now, and our paths just collided, so I'm like,
oh my gosh.
I always knew when I was doing it, I'm planting seeds, and I won't be around to see what they grow up to be. In that case, I did, and I'm like, you saved them.
Jeez, Brian. I mean, first of all, I'm not surprised, dude. Your impact that you had on the kids was astronomical, and that was pre-meditation. That was when we were just trying to find clarity in chaos on a daily basis in there. I want to ask you a little bit, because we both worked at a career and technical education school that was in a league of its own, right? We had kids from all five boroughs trying to come to the only public culinary arts high school in the city. So we were fortunate enough to learn the value of what CTE meant to kids. You've had this incredible trajectory from media and entertainment to educational leadership, now shaping CTE pathways in Mount Vernon. Looking back, was there like a defining moment when you realized that, you know, this was something awesome that you're working on throughout your career, your teaching career specifically, where you can say, you know, this is going to be my calling. This is where I've left my mark. Because a lot of teachers go through time and they're proud of like, oh yeah, I rolled out this initiative, or I had this one kid. In your situation here, throughout that trajectory, what would you say is like that one awesome thing?
There are many awesome things, but if we're looking for a theme that ties it all together, I would say when you say CTE, before I even knew what that term was, I saw myself as a CTE teacher, because I didn't love school so much when I was in school. I find that I was a person who learned a lot, but not necessarily the confines of a classroom with a person handing me sheets and telling me things that didn't seem really all that relevant. So from day one, when I left my television career and I went into, for 1 year, it was like a marketing classroom where I was, you know, I created a whole curriculum for seventh grade students. I was teaching them, because after Comedy Central, I was at Fox Kids for 4 years, and I was the director of on-air promotions, and I saw all sorts of things. It was all the shows that, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon and all this kind of thing, and I saw the high level of manipulation, and I went in on day one, and I'm like, I'm going to tell you like it is. This is what they're saying about you. This is what they're doing to you. This is happening. And I didn't learn any of this from a book. And I taught that first year that way. The second year, when I went to food and finance,
I was an English teacher, but I tried, and you and I had these conversations. I remember you telling me I knew it, but hearing it from you is really helpful. Make it real. Make it real for them. And they always tried to do it from day one. So then, you know, after all these experiences, the 14 years that I went to Mount Vernon High School, and there was a high degree, and even a tragedy that happened before I got there, and violence, and I like became in as a head of discipline came in there. And then they had a culinary program, and I want to kind of oversee that. They let me as an assistant principal oversee that. Then, you know, the next year was like the whole district. In all of it, my mission and vision was always, I want to prepare young people for reality by being real, by giving them real learning experiences, not necessarily what it says in a book or what the newest EduSpeak is telling you.
Yeah.
Like what my gut, I mean, I have data-informed practices, no question about it. But like, if it doesn't pass my own smell test and my own gut test, I ain't doing it.
I love it. I love that answer, dude. I you know, New York City brings out the best in a teacher. And if you're not gonna survive, you don't last very long. And I feel like you are a survivor. It screams in your responses, and it transitions perfectly to this next question, because
hold on to that question. I want to say one because I know some person's going to watch. This is for one viewer right now. Her name is now Leigh Alston. I knew her by a different name, Carlesha. Mm-hmm. She was one of the students, and we used to teach this book, The Catcher in the Rye, who many students hated it. But I would teach it because I knew that that was a portal, because kids were going through different experiences.
Yeah.
And I could at least leverage the book, whether you like the book or not, to have those important conversations. But I would take that one very differently.
Some of them physically leveraged that book in a way across the classroom.
She threw it at my head twice. Not once, twice.
So that's
forgotten.
That is perfect, right? That's perfect transition, because we went through the trenches at Food and Finance. And it created some of the wildest situations that I've ever think I possibly have seen. The Bronx was wild, but Food and Finance had its own unique nature. So, for example,
the Park West was the Wild West.
The Wild West, man, right? I remember one day showing up in the morning and seeing four kids hogtied with their hands behind their back, right at scanning, laying on the ground. I had just got my coffee, and I walked right in. And they had just had this crazy fight, and the SSAs sorted them all out. And that was when I just got there. One of the SSAs looked at me and was just like, oh, hey, Closey, good morning. I'm like, oh, my gosh. What is something that you can remember that is truly defined as crazy? Let's take just our days at FFHS. What's something that you can recall from that time that was just nuts?
I mean, this could be the entire podcast. I mean, I don't know how much of this crazy you want me to be sharing. I saw parents engaged in behavior on the street outside the building, but like, I've never seen anything like that. And you're in the middle of it. And there are parents, I saw parents going at students.
Like, yeah.
I mean, and you know, you're trying to maintain your own professional integrity and be a leader. And all of a sudden you now have to manage a situation where there's a whole other adult who's behaving, and you talk about crazy, and it's like you say New York City's crazy, and it almost is like demeaning in a certain point. But what you see in situations is like you see kids who have enough integrity that they know better than adults sometimes.
Yes.
So while you'll see negative behavior, you'll also see the best behavior you've ever seen in your life. But yeah, there's a lot of fun craziness.
There was a lot of crazy. Yeah. There was a lot of crazy. It kind of brings me to a bit of a segment. I want to play a game with you, if you will. And it's combining your career. So we'll take career and technical education, and we'll take television, and we're going to play the ultimate New York City guessing game. And so what we'll do is I will announce to you a scenario, and you can say if it was true or false, and then did it happen in CTE, in a CTE setting in a school, TV, or entertainment, or both. Okay?
This is in real life? Like, did this thing actually happen, or is this a hypothetical?
True or false is the first question. So some of them maybe not. Two students were once locked outside on the school roof and had to wave hand signals to the glass building adjacent to the school because they were stuck up stuck on the roof for over an hour. True?
That's true.
Was that a CTE, TV, or both?
That's a CTE that should be on TV.
Do you remember that?
I wasn't there for it, but I vaguely remember the story.
Oh, full transparency. Me and Moultrie. Oh my gosh. We did get a call. It was from the police who had somebody at a neighboring building, saw kids on the roof waving their hands. We went on the camera. Moultrie and I, of course, looked on the camera, and there were a couple of kids that were sitting on the roof waving their hands. They were up there. We rewound to see how long they were there for. But then we decided to watch them for a little bit, Mr. Simmons, just to make sure that they were okay.
I'm going to throw one more at you. There was a very large, big kid. I don't know if I should say his first name or not. Should I say it?
No. Like I remember him.
No? Right. You remember him? And there were two chef instructors who were both really out there.
Yeah.
Right? With big personalities, big tempers, and they got, as sometimes chefs do in a kitchen, but it almost got borderline violent, screaming at each other, right? And then the next day, this kid was the salt of the earth, great kid, nice, a little on the slower end.
Yes.
Right? And he wouldn't speak all that much. And then the next day, all of a sudden, he starts in perfect pitch emulating the conflict and repeating what the adults, everything that they said. And it was like, yeah.
That careful was- what you say in front of the kids, man. Oh, I loved it. Those, yes, the chefs were unique. Layer to the onion there at Food and Finance. Usually you don't have chef instructors with their personalities and their outside stories. That characteristic of a chef, stereotypical, right? Throw that in a classroom, it's kind of the opposite.
That element over the course of years at that particular place calmed down. Was when you were there, that was really,
oh, wonderful.
Got much more professional over the course of years. But yeah, after those were funny moments back then.
So, all right, so let's do another one. True or false, CTE, TV, or both? A famous politician once came to the school to motivate students in an assembly, but couldn't perform because when they were preparing in the school office, crack smoke from the bums below the building in an abandoned subway station billowed up through the vents, and she got sick. True, false, CTE, TV, or both?
I'm going to say true and TV. That's my guess.
True and TV. This happened in my office. Remember that vent that you could lift up? I had a metal filing cabinet over top of it in case somebody ever made their way up. And there was that abandoned, I guess it would have been not a 10th Avenue subway station.
It was a train station, yeah, Amtrak.
It was an Amtrak, right? It was an Amtrak, abandoned Amtrak, and these dudes would smoke crack underneath there all the time. And it billowed up through, and she was preparing in my office, and I was standing outside waiting. In my own office, right? And she opens up the door. She's like, can you come back in? I'm like, yeah, what's going on? She's like, there's a funky smell in here. I knew it right away. Not that it was crack, but I was like, I think we need to leave. She's like, what is it? And I'm like, well, there's an abandoned train station underneath and the homeless down there usually start fires to keep themselves warm. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Richard, you remember Richie? Richie. Remember the old, he like had a bit of a limp, one of the old custodians, Richie?
I do. Yeah, yo.
Always super angry, yeah. Right? Richie came over, and he was across the hall, and I'm like, Richie, you know, we're going to go up to Turgeon's office. Can you see what's going on in my office? I think the bums downstairs are trying to heat themselves up, and he opens up the door, Brian. We're not even to Hull's room, right? So it's only like three classrooms down from my office, and he yells out, that ain't fire smoke, it's crack! Down the whole hallway. And here's this prominent New York City politician right there. One of my fondest moments, I got to tell you. It's up there with Coates not shaking her hand shortly thereafter.
The degree of censoring of stories, I'm thinking of Richie right now, and he was dispensing more than paper towels.
Yes, yes.
So I have to say, because you said Richie, what comes to mind is like, and this is really at the heart of education, is some of the relationships that you build. Is Dave LaMotto is like, when I think back of my years in there,
yeah,
you know, he passed away a few years ago, and I got very, very close with him after your left, because he was my special ed teacher for I think 10 years.
Yeah,
10 years straight. We ended up like, it was like left hand, right hand, and. He's just one of these guys. I'm going to see him again. There's just no question about this.
I got in a call with him.
Yeah.
In the last couple of weeks, actually, oddly enough, Miss Kong had reached out, and she was like, "Dude, you need to give Dave a call." And it was almost like I had seen him yesterday. We went right back into it. Every other word out of his mouth was an F-bomb. Everything was like typical old school Dave. But it broke my heart. That was one of the tougher conversations I remember having in a long time. I'll miss Dave for sure.
When we're off the air, I want to tell you my last meeting with him was at that time. It's just, I know the audience always hates when someone says this. I'm going to tell you, I can't say it on video, but
yeah.
It's worth it. It's worth it.
I'm looking forward to it, man, because I will always miss Dave.
He will always be the best. I've never seen anyone relate to kids that way, that real, that
ever.
Like him.
And I doubt we'll ever see that again. Something never, tells me you'll never see it again either.
Never.
But he was so down to earth. It was interesting. You're right. His perspective, I think, could only be Dave's. While we're on the topic of teachers and their characteristics, here's another one for you. A teacher would do their laundry in the break room, which had a laundry room in it. But they would undress and clean even the clothes they had on while the machines were running. And they waited for it to finish with nothing on. True, false, CTE, TV, or both?
Can I answer these questions once I'm receiving a pension? But okay, all right. So I'm going to say true, and I'm going to say CTE. We can find it, yeah.
That was one of the more bizarre scenarios. Good teacher, sort of. Good teacher.
Bad judgment.
Right, yes.
Bad judgment.
Last one. I once had to teach a class while someone was filming a reality TV show in the hallway. True, false, CTE, TV, or both?
I'm going to say true. CTE.
It was close to happening, but it never did. It was false. I stole it from Boston Public, which I just watched not long ago. Good episode, right? But that was a fun game to play. I want to do one more thing with you, Brian, because you're so bright. And every time we have these conversations, I feel like they're usually organic. It's very natural. From day one, you and I have always had this an easy connection. But I want the listeners to know Brian Simmons. And so I want to put you through New York City related prompts. And let's see if we can do a lightning round. Let's get the final New York City word and find out who Brian Simmons is. So I'll give you a prompt with a question. You just give me the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
All right. Best New York City street food.
I know I should say falafel, but I'm going with tacos.
Tacos? Really?
Those are my favorite. But yeah, it should be falafel.
Okay, wait. Then before we go any further, I've been saying when I came out here first in 2013, I would say to everybody, when they would say, "What is the food like?" I'm like, "It's great, except for Mexican. Nobody makes Mexican food good out there." Since it's changed, is that what you're telling me?
Dude, I live in Astoria, Queens. There's killer Mexican here. There's one a block away. It's awesome. I love it.
I love to hear that. Okay. All right. Good answer. Not expecting that one. Okay. Take a second, if you will, but think about this one. Worst New York City subway station.
I don't know, man. Union Square is getting pretty bad. Union Square is getting pretty bad.
Okay.
There's a million intersections in there, and there's like a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool because you have the performances happening and like you have artists and stuff, but it's less safe than it used to be. I mean, I know there's more in outer boroughs and stuff, but I'm going with Union Station.
Okay, fair enough.
Union Square.
Union Square, that's not good to hear. Okay, next one.
No, listen, I'm just giving my own personal take on it. It is not at the level of the ones you're talking about. I'm just trying to give a spicy answer.
All right, I got you. Thank you. All right. Most unexpected celebrity encounter.
Yeah, I've seen a ton of them. I'll tell you, because I'm a drummer, right? I was on 23rd Street in Home Depot years ago, and my childhood idol was Lars Ulrich.
Oh my gosh! Right?
When he had the flowing hair and all of this, I'm sitting there and
Metallica.
And you know, I just idolize this guy, and I see him in Home Depot, and I walk up to him. And he's looking at the lights or whatever. And I turn around and I go, "Lars." He looks at me and I go, "I started playing the drums because of you." He stops, he pauses, and he goes, "Is that a good thing?" I go, "Take care, Lars." And I walk right away.
See ya, dude.
Take care, Lars.
Wow. That's a good, dude, good spot. In Home Depot, like the only Home Depot in the city at that time, right? Jeez. Yeah. Okay.
He was fishing for a compliment that he was not going to get.
Yeah. All right. Craziest thing you've ever seen happen in a classroom?
I've seen a lot of crazy things happen.
Okay.
I don't know how much I want to admit to stuff right now. I remember this story. I think I acted ethically. I remember it was the last week of school. And their two kids had a beef, and one of them was a real tough street kid, and the other one was a lot of mouth. And he was tall and thin, but he was chinning it up. And I'm just sitting there, and we're watching his video the last week of school. The tall kid comes in, the lights are down, hovers over the last kid, and he hits him in the face. The other kid, who is now really tough, they go to the ground. I turn around, and there was no time to call any, no anything. I was in my younger days, right?
I'm
in my 50s now. I dive into it. And I start restraining the two of them. These kids can really fight. You know, this is not like, you know. You get restrained. Someone gets you. You come into the classroom. I'll never forget this as long as I live. And turn around. You walk in as the administrator. You're looking around. You're sizing up the situation. Someone says Sims broke it up. And you walk past me so no kid could hear it. And I'm going to censor it. And you go, you're an effing warrior. As you keep walking in the other side of the room, I remember that happened. So, yeah, that was...
Oh, my gosh.
Do you remember that?
I do remember saying that to you, yes. I remember saying that to you. I do.
It was just wild. Desks flying and the whole thing. Yeah, but nowadays, like, you don't get involved. You don't touch it. But, I mean, listen, I could just sit there and see two people pummeling each other, kids in front of me. And, oh, let me run around and try to call someone. It just wasn't how I'd want it.
You know, it's crazy. When I came out to California, one of the first questions I asked was, how often do you guys call 911? And they were like, what? We haven't called all year. I'm like, oh, all right then. That's how normal schools are. Got it. Mental note.
And you probably grew very bored really quick.
It was interesting, dude. They had just as many. They were just defined totally differently. But I did prefer the New York City chaos, I got to say. All right. How about?
I love the grit and the realness. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was what it was. Like, it meant so much more to a kid that had nothing, you know. And I recognized that immediately, almost in an immediate conversation with somebody. You could tell, like, I feel like you said this earlier. The kids can tell if you were real, and they would pick you apart if you weren't. And I could tell if a kid was joshing me, and I would be able to just divide them. Until I conquered that scenario, so.
And there was a window of opportunity, like when I, you know, now I don't intend to go back into discipline, but then who knows what happens in your education, but like I felt there was a window of opportunity when a kid would be in a situation, they're at their worst, right? You're just completely emoting and it comes out of you. No one wants to see this, so even someone watching, we're advocating for this in educational settings, we're not. But these things do happen. And when they happen, there's a window open where you can look a kid square in the face without judging them. And this behavior is wrong. You can't tolerate it. But
yeah.
I'm not judging you as a person. And I understand how a person can get to that point. I get it. And when you sit there and you look at someone, you can really build a strong foundation of a relationship with someone. One of the things that I would do with that mindfulness class when I was dean is I created this right before the pandemic. It was this policy that was, I would do what I would call, in addition to the mindful fitness class, I would call it student and staff stress reduction. Once a week, after school, right at 3 o'clock on a Wednesday, I would be there. Whoever wants to come and do stress reduction, some mindfulness, whatever, it was open to them to do that. And I created the discipline policy or modify where if a kid was going to get suspended, they got fired or whatever. Let's say they're going to have 4 days. And I'm turning around like, all right, dude, you want a 4-day suspension? Or you want to bargain it down to one and come to 4 sessions of stress reduction after school? I knew it was a winner on the first time I did it. I remember the kid Dante. Call the mom, tell Dante this is what it is. And he's like, yeah, I'm not doing that. And he walks up, I'm like, clock is ticking. You got till 2:30. And we're not renegotiating. Turn around and I let ride, went on the rest of my day. 2:29, bang, 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 bang. I'll take it. I'm like, all right, I'll see you on Wednesday. And the kid came every week.
Huh.
And then I realized like mom was thanking me. And I'm like, I have never suspended a kid and gotten thanked for it before. Like,
yeah.
This is, we're on to something.
How about that? I love that you're using discipline as a form of growth and behavior. Because a lot of times that's not what it is, you know?
No. Yeah.
All right. Let me get you a couple more and then we'll get you out of here, dude. Cause you're amazing to talk to, but I know your time is valuable. You're suiting it up and it's 7 o'clock. biggest difference between TV and schools?
They say reality is stranger than fiction. And I would say what you see in a school is really, it's more creative, and it's
everything on television is contrived.
Yeah.
But from a sheer comedic lens, like if you really look at the heart of comedy, as a guy who was at Comedy Central, at the height of Comedy Central, in the heyday of it, I laughed deeper at some of the things I saw in public high schools in a good way than I did. And I laughed a lot at Comedy Central, but like the real sheer authentic human moments would happen. I'm like, you can't write this. Yeah. You just can't write this.
If we were only able to write our history of being a teacher in our times at Food and Finance, dude, I kind of feel like we had a script on our hand in those days. All right, one teacher at FFHS that you'll always remember.
I'm going back to LaMotto.
Yeah.
LaMotto is 1, 2, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. That guy is, he's one of those few people that you meet in life who is just so authentic, so unique, so genuine, that he, in my mind, he's almost like family to me. Like I've told my family about him, and he's a guy who just touched me on a very deep level. I look back on all those memories we're talking about with a lot of fondness, the early years and the years with him. Like when I'd go real and we're talking about like teaching Hamlet or like, how do you break down Hamlet for kids who maybe have no relate? And we go into the real human element, and he and I would riff, and he was just so real and coming in. There were like moments that were just pure magic.
Yeah.
That you look back and you're like that was magic, man, that happened. And I know the kids in the room at the time are now in their 20s, 30s, maybe in 40s at this point. I know that they feel that same way when they think back to some of those moments.
I agree, man. Absolutely. There's no way those kids are forgetting Dave. No way. His impact on them was phenomenal. I'm going to throw one more at you, one more teacher name at you. This person came out to see me a couple of times. I think they have a kid that was out here for a bit. And now I think that kid's like a world traveler. It was Navy SEAL. But whatever, I can't remember what the highest level of the Navy SEAL, the Ranger, whatever the highest Navy SEAL is what this kid ended up being. John Hagemeyer. Remember Haggy? Chef Haggy?
Yeah, that was like the first year, you know. Yeah. So like I didn't have a strong relationship, but I he was a salty character.
Yep.
I don't even want to get into like some of the stories that he told.
I remember observing him. He was the first person to say to me, "I was teaching longer than you've been alive. What are you going to tell me about what I just did that I'm not doing right?" First of all, it was terrible that he was right. He was making baked Alaska. And I was like, let me do your lesson over in the way I think you should teach it and teach it again tomorrow. And if it works better than the way you did it today, I'll come back in your classroom. If it doesn't, I'll leave you alone. How about that? And he was just like, deal. And so I went home that night, read everything about baked Alaska that I possibly could. This was before like YouTube and everything were influential in our lives. And so I was like looking in cookbooks, but I used the workshop model lesson plan with the aim and the do now and same things I still talk about today with the mini lesson, et cetera. And the exit strategy, and I gave it to him. And I showed up the next morning, and I gave him the lesson plan. And I was like, all right, I'll see you at the end of today. Just tell me how it went. And the day had gone on, and to be honest with you, Brian, I forgot about it. Like a million things happened, and I was back in the office, and he knocks on the door and comes in, and he's like, fair enough. That worked out way better. I did like so much less. I have a lot of energy right now. What the heck is this all about? What's a workshop model? I'm like, oh man. And so it worked, dude. And that's how I got a really good relationship with Hagemeyer. From then on, he was just like, whatever this guy says, I'm going to listen to. I'm like, all right, that's fair enough. But
yeah, good on both of you, because you were both open-minded enough him to receive your critique, and you to give him the space to say, I'm not the expert. I'll give you something I think can work. And if it doesn't work, then I'll move on. And you were both honest enough to admit where this was.
Yeah.
And then you moved the ball forward for the kids. So that's great.
Yeah.
And one more memory of him. I'm not going to tell the story, but you'll know what it is. It's Hagemeyer in a boat. Remember that story when he told the entire staff?
Oh my gosh. That. Holy smokes. After all your years in both education and in entertainment, if you had to give a piece of advice to someone trying to make it in education or in this world today, what would it be? And what are some sources that you could share?
There's a lot of technique. There's a lot of strategy. There's a lot of theory. There's a lot of data
It is a place for all of that stuff. But in the end, what I believe is you have to be authentically who you are. Mm-hmm. And in every one of those environments, there's going to be voices telling you that something is the right way to do things. And in some cases, it might be. Be open to that. But the best thing that you bring is you. And you're going to touch into something that someone else would not see. And if you stick to that and you're honest about it and you take feedback and all of this, but you're like, I am going to have a connection with students in front of me in a way that nobody else on planet Earth can do. I'm going to write a script in a way that no one else on planet Earth can do. And you stick to that, good things are going to happen.
Yeah. Dude, that was, I remember when we first met. And to think of where we are now, it's quite a road. It's definitely leading me to have to put the glasses on to see, because I wrote this down so I would say it properly in conclusion. I'll always remember what food and finance taught me, but I'll never forget the experiences that I made working with a team of educators, and you were right there on those front lines daily during some of the most challenging days of my career. I can never thank you enough for going along with everything that I was doing, because we were all learning on the fly, but I had rock stars like yourself. So thank you. This has been an absolute pleasure, Brian. I know I had heard from Carlesha, who was actually saying, you need to reach out to Old Food and Finance. You need to reach out to teachers and to students and just the people in your career that you know. And you were one of the first people that I reached out to, because our conversations have always just been so organic. So,
well, congratulations on all your success, Joe. Thanks for, I have very, very sweet memories from what we built together back then. It was great. It was wild. It was fun. It was funny. And those memories will last a lifetime. So thanks for playing the role that you did in it.
Thanks for listening to the Traveling Principal Show. Please remember to like and subscribe to this channel. Send me an email if you're interested in what I got going on. I'd be happy to get you on the show. Educators, educational leaders, if you got something in education that you're really proud of and you want to share, let's chat.